Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, bringing you everything you need to know about Prince Edward Island real estate and more. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And at the end of this show, we're going to cover some quick tips if you happen to be looking for real estate in PEI, particularly if you're off island. We've probably got about a half a dozen quick little tips that will make finding property in PEI a lot easier. Let's start with number one. This time of the year, we have what, Patty?
Lots of new listings that are starting to come onto the market at this time of year. And those who decided after the Christmas holidays, they've put their decorations away, that now they can entertain the idea of actually bringing their property onto the market. Because a lot of people are concerned if they bring it on before Christmas. One, they're not going to get any showings, but they do miss out on the family members and friends who come to the island to visit family and friends over the holidays. However, at least you're not contending or having your Christmas holidays or your holiday season interrupted by showings.
So at the end of the year, there's a lot of listings that expire. A ton of them expire on that December 31st for whatever reason. We also know that real estate is cyclic. In PEI, the cycle, there's two cycles, from spring to the middle of summer. They take a bit of a break, vacations, off work, whatever, then it picks back up until the school season. But there's also another underlying cycle, and that is directly attributed to weather. So if the weather's really nice, like it has been this year, we're looking out at the Charlottetown waterfront, there's not a millimeter of snow on the ground, what happens to the real estate market?
It starts to pick up.
So you do have a lot more people listing properties, and I've seen a ton of them go across my screen as I watch the hot sheet and new listings being emailed to me.
Yeah, and many people are starting to plan their summer vacation, so they're looking for cottage rec properties now to hopefully have something secured so they get to enjoy the summer 2025 here on Prince Edward Island. One thing I was going to say, just in case our listeners do not know what an expired listing is. An expired listing is one that was under contract. Typically, contracts are for 6 months to a year. And if it doesn't get renewed onto the MLS system, it automatically then goes on as expired.
Exactly. Moving on, buying real estate with no money down. I was watching some videos on YouTube, and there's a lot of people, you know, you see these old infomercials, buying real estate with no money down. And for the most part, I think people think it's a big hoax, but I personally have done it, and in a really easy fashion, which may or may not be open to different property owners. And essentially what you're doing when you're buying property with no money down, in my case, what I did is I went to the bank or one of my lenders. I said, it was an apartment building. I want to put zero money down. And I'm going to use these other properties that I have that don't have a mortgage on them as collateral. And surprisingly enough, they went along with it. I ended up buying this building and selling it a few years later for profit. So you can, in fact, buy property with no money down as an investor, speculator, or maybe you want a second home or a cottage. Or what we talked about before is if you're in retirement and you need an extra source of income, providing you have the right financial picture, you could potentially buy income properties to supplement your income. So that's typically how buying real estate with no money down works. There's other ways you can do it, but this is probably the simplest.
Yeah, I would agree. Without getting into all the for first-time home buyers and that, this...
Or vendor take-back mortgages and all this sort of stuff that doesn't happen usually in reality if the market is good.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, you had, getting to the comedy section of the podcast, an interesting comment when one of your agents received an offer and the offer was lacking documents. I don't know about you, but the first thing I look at in an offer is not what the price is and what the closing date is. It's what documents are included. So on our purchase and sale agreement, it says that paragraph one, where is it here? Schedule A. So it's just above paragraph one. That's where my confusion. So it's a paragraph that's not even numbered, but it's above paragraph one. It says schedules A, agency disclosure, and then they've got a blank, are attached here to, are incorporated herein by reference, and form part of this agreement. So it's just spelling out that when someone gives you an offer, these documents are part of that offer. Any documents not mentioned on this line are not inclusive or included in that offer, and any documents that are indicated should be included with that offer. Otherwise, that offer could be determined to be invalid because it's not complete because they didn't sign it or initial it.
Yeah. So you need to just be mindful and aware. If you have an offer, you are a buyer, and you've submitted an offer to a seller, hopefully through, professional realtors involved, and you had a Schedule B attached that might have had some additional chattels or extra requests. If the Schedule B is not identified in this paragraph, in this line that Michael's referring to, even if both parties sign it, it could be disputed that that doesn't form part of the contractual agreement. So you need to be very mindful of this agreement of purchase and sale. And if you're an agent listening, I have seen this so many times where they just leave that line blank. I don't know if they think it's just a border or something.
Extra
there.
Space for doodling.
What? You are to put in, like, if there's a PCDS, the PCDS needs to be identified there. If you have a Schedule B, a property feature sheet, a geo-ortho, a survey, everything has to be written down. Now, the situation that you were talking about, Michael, one of my agents on my team submitted a complete contract because they're very well trained. And as part of our contract agreement, we have to provide agency disclosure, disclosing that this buyer is under buyer's agency with that representing realtor. When we received the offer back is what happened. The listing brokerage, the listing agent, refused to sign, just initial as an acknowledgement of being part of the contract, refused to sign the agency disclosure. So my agent, of course, came to me and said, Patty, what do I do with this? Like, they didn't sign, they won't initial it. And I said, you need to go back and you need to point out to them that it is part of the contractual agreement. They're signing the seller to acknowledge and accept that the buyer has their own representation. He did that, to which the response back later on that day was, my broker said, I don't have to, or my clients do not have to initial it at this time, which just floored. I told my agent, let's focus on the buyer. Let's, make sure that his buyer is going to go ahead and move forward. And then we're going to press even harder if we have a firm deal to get that initialed. But it's not a decision or a choice. I'm going to sign it later.
But why would an agent even do that? You've got a PDF file that you're not supposed to remove parts of, because with digital signatures, those digital signatures refer to that complete package. So the agent goes out of his way to remove part of that offer, which is included with the purchase and sale, indicated on that line just above paragraph one and page one of the purchase and sale. And then he pulls the, I'm going to talk to my broker, which is something you'll hear with newbie agents or inexperienced agents. So his broker, we actually ran the stats. We've got a broker here that's had one sale and six listings in his entire life, is telling an agent not to sign a document that's included in the purchase and sale package and is clearly spelled out to do so. I don't even understand the motivation for that. For all the time it took that agent to tattletale to his broker, he could have just got the agency disclosure signed.
Yeah, it just needed to be initialed as an acknowledgement. That's all it was. It's silly. It was just silly and a big time waster for my agent to have to come back and forth to me saying, how do we proceed from here?
That was a two-hour conversation.
No, it wasn't. But it is additional time that is unnecessary. And then what do you say to your buyer client? Well, we only got part of the contract back. Or do you not let them know? I always say disclose and say, just so you're aware, the seller is probably being advised to not initial or include the agency disclosure portion of the contract until we have a firm deal, which just sets the tone off to make the buyer not feel comfortable with these or trust the sellers involved. So the agency has to be initialed as an acknowledgement that it is part of the contractual agreement if you are a listing agent submitting an offer to your seller.
Unless otherwise noted or modified in the purchase and sale agreement.
Correct.
The documents therein. Next, how many times do you argue with property owners about what features to mention and not mention when doing write-ups? And should they not just take your advice on what's going to sell the property?
They should take your advice, but there are sellers who feel that they have sold many properties over the years, or they know their house better than anyone else, and their personality type is one that it's very important to them that the R factor in the attic is disclosed, or sometimes just silly
things. 6mm flooring is in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Triple pane windows with security locks.
Where the windows came from. Just items that do not matter on the initial onset of a buyer looking at that property. They will not concern themselves with those items if the criteria that they're looking for, whether it's location, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, whether it's got a basement or not, those are the first things that they need to concern themselves with. And if you're a seller and you want to take control of your realtor and tell them how to do their job, maybe you didn't pick the right realtor if you're not trusting them and their skill set.
The bottom line is the agent should know what should be in that description, what the picture should look like, what the video should contain in order to present that property or that package as best as they can to get your property sold quickly for more money with less hassle. There's also a whole list of words they've determined with research that you can put in the description that are more likely to attract a potential buyer. And both Patty and I have that, certainly can email it to you. I think one of the words is meticulous. Doesn't that sound fancy?
Yes, it does. Yes. And that's the other thing, Michael, then you just bringing our attention to that is your story, your overview. And I believe we've covered this on previous episodes, but to have the introductory into your overview or your marketing story of your property being 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, or something about the specs of the home and not about the lifestyle that you can expect to experience if they were to purchase that home. You might have to just call out your agent and say, I want a better story. I don't like it. Again, if you're a personality type, we study DISC at our office. High C's want all the details put out. They want all the specs. That is not what major successful companies do. They tell you the experience that you're going to have if you drink this bottle of Coke, or, you know, they want you to feel good. And that's what your overview about your property should be, not, you know, about all the other specs and the details. That can come later, or that can come as an attachment. So your overview is very important. And yes, that first sentence is key with keywords.
Even on the most boring properties, like we just listed a building lot, and it's a building lot. It's one of 100 different building lots for sale in this community. But the write-up mentions that the golf course is next door, that there's a driving range, that you can walk down to the beach. There's stores and amenities and you can get your hair cut. There's a Tim Hortons, which every Canadian has to have, which within 2 blocks of their house. So it no longer becomes a building lot. It becomes a location for your new dream home.
Yeah. And then what kind of lifestyle can you expect to live if you were to purchase this particular building lot going forward?
And then, of course, the aerial video and photos showed how close it was to the water and the golf course.
Just a good point that, yes, the video offers that information. The person should walk away when they look at that full marketing representation and package on the property, feeling pretty excited if they're looking for a piece of land that, you know what, I want to live that and I see everything there is to see about this property. Now I want a little more detail. I want to know what the specs are. What size of structure can I, you know, build on it? What's the land like? Is it sloping? You know, what kind of structure should I be putting on that property? So those are all later details, but you're absolutely right, Michael. Everything else with the video, the drone, the story, the overview. It's all there to try to explain the lifestyle that one could expect should they decide to purchase that property.
And then after all that stuff's put together, then the marketing begins. If the agent's doing their job, which they should be in order to get you more money and interest and offers and all that sort of stuff, lots of buzz. So now you're going to market that property to the areas and locations that we're getting buyers from. So if all our buyers are coming from somewhere in, say, Southern Ontario or Quebec or Alberta or BC or the Northeast United States, those are the areas you advertise to. When you hear agents talking about advertising in Dubai and China and the UK and these places, these aren't places that we're finding most of our buyers coming from. So if you're going to spend money, you're going to spend money and you're going to pinpoint, just like a laser, those areas where 90% or more of your buyers are coming from. Make sense?
No, it makes sense. And I did have having sellers tell you what to do and how to do your job. I've got a couple of those. One of my sellers has actually told me, and I don't know if I should even say the country, but they want to increase the price of their property. This is a piece of land, not in the best location on the island. And they want me to advertise to a particular country because they feel that that country will overpay for their property, which seems ludicrous. Yeah, it's crazy.
The most likely buyer of a property in Prince Edward Island is someone that either owns property in Prince Edward Island, somebody that's from PEI, knows PEI, or is it vacationed in PEI. If you're to advertise, say, just pick a random location, I don't know, the United Emirates, even if they're attracted to that piece of property, what are they going to look at next? Oh, what's else available in PEI? There's Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland. Maybe we should look there too. You don't have a buyer that's probably going to buy that actual property. So it's money well wasted, just like people advertising horse farms and horse magazines or amateur radio station houses and amateur radio magazines. You still have that challenge of getting over that hurdle of where's PEI? Because these people could be anywhere. Someone in Nebraska or in California is probably not looking for a horse farm or an amateur radio setup in PEI.
No, exactly.
We've done this in the past. It's yielded absolutely nothing. The people that are going to buy that property are probably the people that are already buying those properties that fit within that same demographic, and that's where your money goes, and that's where your results come from. Next and last, quick tips when buying property in Prince Edward Island and some handy little tools and things that you should know when you're looking for property here. And the first of which I've always loved using, but we seem to be using it less and less, probably because we know the island. We're probably using GPSs more. But the provincial map, which, just before we get into that, if you're not aware, if you go to the PEI tourist site, you can get there by typing in peiplay.com. You can order a lot of this stuff, the PEI tourist magazine, the maps, whatever they offer these days, for free online. But one of the handiest things is the PEI provincial map. Now, this is not the map you're going to get in the bookstore or order online from somebody else. This is the map that the province produces, and it's by far the best guide for PEI, for all the communities, the tourist routes, and all that sort of stuff. Lighthouses, would you say?
Yeah, where all the trails are. It's an excellent map, and we have a new buyer, somebody considering Prince Edward Island, we make sure that we include this particular map. We have a stack of them with their package for touring homes and that, so that they can take it back to their hotel room, kind of see where they've been today, see what other options there are, reconcile that with realtor.ca. It's nice to have that tangible physical map instead of always using your phone and trying to zoom in and zoom out.
And you know, your phone, and we're going to touch on this down this list, but your phone is not going to work in some places in PEI, so it's always best to have a GPS. If you're looking for land, you want to have a handheld GPS so you can walk that land, particularly if it's acreage, because it will show you where the property lines are and so forth. So when you are coming to the island, what you want to do is you want to take the tourist routes. You do not want to stick to the main roads, which are usually in the middle of the island where you're not going to see much, in comparison to the tourist routes, which run along the shores. I believe they have them all colored and named too. I think one's Lady Slipper Drive or whatever. I've never really followed.
Stars and.
And there's signs all over the island. But if you follow the tourist routes, that will give you a much better idea as to what area you prefer to the next.
Yeah, and you'll get to see some water views, the rolling hills, the quilted landscape, different times of year. PEI is absolutely beautiful, and you'll see, you know, when the crops just start to come in, or, you know, as the farmers are harvesting and the fields are all that vibrant red clay soil. It's really pretty. And these side tourist roads or the side roads on PEI, they definitely are worthwhile. And I would still bring a physical map along with you too, just in case your cell phone dies and you forgot your charging cable. And if you do not pack a GPS when you travel, I always do. It's one of my definite items that go in my carry-on suitcase wherever I go. If you do not travel with one, you might want to stop and pick one up.
And booking showings. If you've never been to the island, or maybe you've just been here on vacation, you don't really know the island and you're thinking about moving here, do not book showings until you drive by the property, because a lot of people will book a whole pile of showings. And I've had this happen, and there's nothing more annoying than this. They'll book 6 or 7 showings. They'll come to the island preemptively, drive by all the houses, and then they cancel the showings.
Oh, yeah. That is one thing that they'll do for sure. And then the other thing that they do is they'll come to the island. They will book, because here's what it is. They rent a car. They don't want to put too much mileage on it. So they don't want to have to visit these properties twice, because time is of the essence for them. So they'll book, and your clients must be far nicer than some of the ones that I've dealt with, because they want to see 20 properties and they refuse to do their little Powerhouse Patty self-guided tour, is what I used to call it, and drive by them first, because I could guarantee out of those 20, they would be down to maybe 6 or 7. So we drive up to these properties. In my early years, I used to entertain this and I used to drive. I don't regret it, because I got to see a lot of the island, because I was also new to Prince Edward Island back then. But they would refuse to even get out of their vehicle going, "We're not interested." "Well, we've booked the showing." "Yeah, I'm not interested. I'm not getting out." I didn't know what to do the first time I was faced with
grab this. A large bat. Oh. And tell them they're going through the house. The vendors spent 3 days preparing that house. And the bottom of the line is, don't book showings until you're more familiar with the island.
I do go in.
Oh, I would too. But it's just rude to book a showing and then refuse to go in the house.
And
you know the best thing to do there?
What's that?
Drive away. Tell them to get out. See you later. Oh, especially if you're somewhere far up west or down east,
with regards to showings, though, a really good just tip if you are an agent listening to this is please leave your business card. It's so frustrating for a seller. That business card is just your way of saying, "I've been here. I've shown the property. Your home is yours again." Without it, I get the call saying, "Do you know if they've been here? There's no sign," which is great. They didn't leave their muddy shoes or anything anywhere. It stresses the client out, and they're not sure whether the agent was running late. Should they get settled? Should they bring their pups in and let their children, you know, roam free? So now they're sitting in their vehicle. So please leave your business card when you're doing showings. Sorry, I just had to add that.
Absolutely. And as we've discussed, every property in PEI has a PID or property ID number. And there is an online utility. The link is in our show notes here for the podcast description and on my website, where you can access the fastest PEI mapping utility, which is handy over and above your paper map or your GPS, because it will show you the property lines. It will show you like a satellite image of the property. And then, of course, there's other tools that will show you soil types and all kinds of other nifty stuff. So if you're viewing a property, particularly if it's acreage, I had an inquiry there, you know, a week or so ago on 7 or 8 acres that someone was interested in. It turns out when you looked at the aerial photos and did your research and looked at the soil types, it was 95% swamp, which is why it's so inexpensive. So those maps will also save you a lot of time, a lot of driving and traveling. Wouldn't you agree?
I completely.
Now, handheld GPSs. We've covered this before in video on my YouTube channel. You want to have a handheld GPS because particularly when you get near the shore, particular shores in PEI, there is no cell phone coverage. I've had to drive for 2 or 3 miles just to be able to get a tower. So if you're counting on a handheld GPS application to maneuver the island, it may not work. And the other thing I do is I take the mapping tool, and for any property I want to see, whether it has an address or not, I calculate the GPS coordinates, and I use those because you have no idea how many wharf roads, cemetery road, arsenal roads there are here, Riverview, Riverside. I was in one area looking at a cottage, typed in the address on my GPS. There's 3 Riversides in this one area.
Yeah, and without the GPS coordinates, where am I going? Because the communities sometimes don't always align with what you end up assuming. I'm going to this particular community, and it came up with a different community name. So it does leave you, especially if you're time sensitive, you got to get on the road, you chose not to do this, and now you don't know where you're going, and that's very embarrassing.
And the other thing is you can calculate where the corners of the property is. Keeping in mind, this is not a survey, it's a rough guideline, but it will give you an idea of where the property lies, again, particularly if it's larger acreage. And sometimes these larger acreages, you know, I've walked 200 acres, I mean, you can be there for 4.5 hours.
Okay.
And Patty, by the way, is happy to walk any of these properties with you, so just give her a call and the list. It doesn't matter how big, she has lots of time.
And I think you're the one that likes going for walks every afternoon. I'm usually pretty busy. I will say this, Michael, those handheld GPS, how much would you approximately say they are?
I would suggest you go to Garmin.com and you can look that up. I wouldn't even guess. 200-300, right up to 1,000. Some of them will include satellite telephone, satellite or two-way communication. There's all kinds of little gadgets you can get in them. Two-way radios can be built into some of them. You're just basically looking for a nice, if it was me, like a nice touchscreen Garmin unit, knowing full well I'm probably going to use this for years and years and years. And the ones that I have, I do. But of course, we're in the business as well.
My point is, and thank you for giving us an approximate range.
Not sure I did that.
You kind of did. In relation to, if you're here buying land or looking to buy land, and whether it's 20,000 or 200,000, this item, because you're not paying for home inspections and that on land, could be very beneficial to you when you think about it in the grand schemes of what expenses can I expect to have to pay while I am looking to purchase this property. I would incorporate that as one of your purchase costs to ensure that your due diligence. You know where the property lines are approximately, because the coordinates, again, we're trying to pinpoint them unless you have an actual survey that gives you the coordinates. If not, you're just zooming in and placing the little marker yourself and getting those coordinates. However, you should feel far more confident or knowing that this particular, and like you said, Michael, if it's waterfront, this particular waterfront marker doesn't exist because it's been washed to sea from perhaps Fiona. Or you go to look at a property and you're assuming, well, it's just on the inside of this because the adjacent property, their shed is to here or they're cutting to here. Meanwhile, you own an extra 10 feet over, you know, it's just the neighboring property decided to encroach a little bit, expand their lot.
And the satellite views will show you that too, even though they're an approximation. A lot of times they can show you if the neighbors are encroaching your property. A lot of them like to cut their lawn over on vacant lots, put their shed on there, store their firewood, abandoned vehicles. Probably one of the most important things that could save you the cost of a GPS many, many times over that's happened numerous times on the island is you're not buying the wrong property.
Yes, good point.
Because people have bought the wrong building lot going by the guidance of a real estate sign that wasn't placed properly because guess what? the real estate agent didn't use a sign. He pasted off, which is what we used to do in the old days, and he pasted it off. He pasted off to the wrong lot.
Mm-hmm.
So people go out there and figure they're buying lot C and they're really buying lot D, E, or F. The best tool online as far as finding listings, what would it be? The one and only tool you really need.
I actually just had this conversation last week with a client, and that is
what
Realtor.
Was their name?
Realtor.
Full name.
Realtor.ca. That is the number one MLS or property search website available, I guess, in the States. It might be Realtor.com site. But
There's
for
no
us,
guessing about it. It's
for us, Realtor.ca is the number one site platform for you to be searching for commercial, land, cottage, recreational, residential. And then from there, all the third-party sites, real estate brokerages, they all feed from that. So if you wonder, well, why isn't my agent, they don't have the property on their site, sometimes it takes a couple days or the price doesn't reflect it. Most agents, most people use Realtor.ca. There is an app. I use Realtor.ca at least once a week. I will log in and do my searches. I'm looking for a property for my daughter who lives in Halifax, and I'm using Realtor.ca to see if we can even find a piece of land for her.
And to take it a step further, if you're going to zoom in on a certain area, you know your price range, what you're looking for, your agent, Patty or I or whoever can set up a search in our system that will email you anything that comes up within that delineated area that fits your criteria in real time. So between Realtor.ca and the search that we can set up, you'll be well equipped.
Yeah, and you can favorite, you can set up alerts on it if you feel like you're not ready to be working with a realtor or having an agent representing you. You're just getting started, because that's where I am. I don't want to have a relationship yet with a realtor in the Halifax area. I am just doing some research, because this could happen this year, it could happen next year. So they do have alerts. You can set up a little account on there and be notified when properties meet the criteria that you've inputted.
And these for sale by owner sites, for sale by owners, almost all have one thing in common, and that is...
they are all overpriced.
I've been with at least three different people that turned into for sale by owners, and absolutely one of them was completely unrealistic in price. In fact, one was really humorous. It was a house they paid $275,000, $325,000 for 3 or 4 years ago, probably worth $5 and change now. It's not in the greatest location, but it's decent. It's got some nice features. I could really see how I could market this. And I asked the owner what he feels it was worth, knowing it was going to be some ridiculous price. I could just tell by what he was saying. And basically, I had to put him into a corner. I said, because he wouldn't tell me, because we had to play guessing games, you know that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not what I do. I show them data. I said, do you think it's worth more than $5? And he said, yes. I said, do you think it's worth more than $6? And he said, yes. And behind him is his wife jumping up and down with her thumb up, saying more, more, more. In other words, he thought it was worth over $1 million.
Oh, my goodness.
So now it's on the system for about $1 million, and it's not worth that. So you really need to be cautious of this, because what people have a tendency to do is they're coming in from Mississauga or Edmonton or somewhere in Vancouver, and then they're comparing those values to our values, think, oh, $1 million, and you buy a home in the country. Oh, what a beautiful location, not knowing that it's a C-grade location in the country, and they just bought the property for a third of what they're asking for it today. I had the same thing happen with two other properties, same thing, just pulled a number out of the air, and of course, they all end up in the same place for sale by owner. So be very, very cautious. I would strongly advise, if you are going to deal with for sale by owners, you do have some representation in the form of a real estate agent and probably a lawyer to make sure that your contracts are tight. You've got someone negotiating on your behalf.
And you do, talking about buying a private sale with a realtor, they can do what we call a reverse CMA to determine whether or not the price on it is actually market value and not the seller's value. Because if it's the seller's value, you're paying all their credit card debt, possibly they're upping their new home. They want marble countertops instead of the granite. Like, you're paying for that, which is not market value and not how prices are determined. And you're going to be the one stuck with that property should your life circumstances change. You'll be waiting 10, 20 years to be able to get your money out or selling at a loss.
So we did have a little bit of snow storm or two here. And I went to look at a new listing I have, and there's about a 2 or 3 foot snowbank in the driveway. And right away I thought, and I've mentioned this before, is make sure your house is insured as a vacant house if you're not living in it, because the insurance companies may look at the pictures and see that it's vacant. And the other thing is make sure that you have snow removal services, because if the fire truck can't get to the house to put out a fire, if there is one, you may find your insurance isn't valid. And that's basically it.
Yeah. And just know that insurance companies, and this is newer, it's not something that was done, at least not in my experience, 5-10 years ago even, but I do find insurance companies are checking on these properties. So don't assume, yes, you're going to probably have to pay a vacant premium for your insurance coverage. However, if you decide that you're going to misrepresent or not disclose that it is vacant because you've used to use it as your primary residence and now you've moved off island, they do check. If they see that address on the MLS, a lot of insurance companies have paid access or, insurance representatives, so they can see our MLS system, and they will go out and physically inspect the property. Now, I've had a seller say that was trespassing, and she was very upset because her property was inspected, and they did tell her that they were pulling insurance unless she ended up filling out the forms and properly disclosing that the property was vacant over the winter.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wrap her up. And you're the greatest one at that.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, the one and only podcast here on Prince Edward Island that helps navigate you through the purchasing of a PEI property or selling, telling you all the little tips, tricks, and traps that you may find, as well as everything Prince Edward Island. So until next time, have a great day. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening, and talk to you soon.
Take care, everybody. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.